Chapter 4. Marion Q. Honeysuckle.
They don't often get letters, which is a pity, because it's nice to get letters.
Perhaps it's because no one's written us any, suggests the soldier,
always inclined to look on the bright side of things. Mostly she only gets bills. But one bright morning, when the sun is staring in through Mixie's lace curtains, the postman knocks.
Oh, sorry,
she apologises.
The bell's out of order.
Who can this one be from? Picking it up, she puts it on the coffee table. It can wait until she has her elevenses. Now the boys have gone out for their morning stroll, and she sits down with her cup of coffee and opens it. The letter, written in primly proper and spiky handwriting, reads,
My dear Mixie, perhaps you don't remember me, but I remember you very well indeed from our, alas, so distant youth. You were always so cheerful and pretty, unlike me, who you said was as self-effacing as a moth on a curtain. Well, I am not like that now. Afterwards I heard you'd made a brilliant match with a gentleman of striking appearance and undoubted genius. I'm sure he has made a great name for himself in the world. My own poor dear husband, a distant cousin three times removed of the same name as myself, was lost at sea.
How sad, thinks Mixie, sitting down, and a lump comes into her throat. She reads on.
Since then I have lived very quietly and devote myself to good causes. The other day I heard that you offer accommodation to select persons. Being myself such a person, and in need of accommodation, I take the liberty of presuming on our old friendship to write and ask if you have a nice sunny room with a view out over your garden, which I am sure is delightful. If so, I should be interested to know your terms. In hopes of soon hearing from you, I remain yours truly, Marion Q. Honeysuckle, Mrs.
Mixie puts down the letter. Yes, she vaguely remembers Marion Honeysuckle from the days when she'd polished her father's, the Reverend Bombastus Honeysuckle's, table silver and cleaned his patent leather boots, until she'd been dismissed for being saucy. Since then, truth to tell, she hasn't given Marion a thought. Down in the right-hand corner, there's a P.S. and a P.T.O.
Though I have few pretensions, I'm a vegetarian. One finds everything one needs in a good cauliflower. Meat is both unnecessary and unhealthy, and I detest cruelty to poor, dumb animals. Being so fortunate as to have a small private income, I am able to indulge such foibles.
Mixie looks around her sitting room and sees Marion Q. Honeysuckle already planted in her rocking chair. Quite right. That's where she always sits, day in, day out, knitting for good causes. Her outsize handbag on the floor beside her has a very firm clasp, as both Trixie and the owl soon find out.
Mrs. Carry-on Money Chuckle,
Trixie calls her behind her back, or
the Deadly Nightshade.
She's so bony that to meet her in the street, he says, is like bumping up against an untuned piano. Marion Honeysuckle, Mrs., has a way of starting her sentences with,
If you ask me,
though no one does, and then suddenly breaking them off, leaving you to make up the rest for yourself. She's full of pious sayings and ancient wisdom such as,
No time like the past,
and
"Look after number one, and God will look after everyone else."
Her knitting needles irritate Trixie beyond words and distract Professor McCology when he reads The Scotsman to see what's happening to the Scottish pound. He's got one, he admits, in a bank in Edinburgh. The soldier doesn't like her much either. She gives him nightmares of being back in the tower, and even Mr. Muddle whimpers in his sleep. Trixie may not know the distance between Beetlejuice and Vega, but he knows the way down to the day after tomorrow, and one afternoon when the soldiers had some luck on the dogs, he offers to stand him a pint.
You're cheers.
Sieg Heil! Down the hatch!
Of course, the owl isn't allowed in, on account of his droppings. So he has to sit on a branch outside.
Ooh.
When they've gone, Mrs. Honeysuckle lays down her knitting.
Put the kettle on, dear,
she tells Mixie in a honey-sweet yet slightly scary voice.
I've something to show you.
Mixie puts on the kettle and Mrs. H deftly opens her handbag. Taking out a crystal ball, she puts it down on the coffee table between them.
I see gold,
she says dreamily after a moment's gazing.
Lots and lots of it, only,
she adds, puzzled.
It's all so high up in the air. I see a handsome, tall gentleman, immensely rich, who's taken a deep fancy to you, and,
even more puzzled,
here's a mauve telephone.
Mauve? Mixie echoes, astonished.
Yes, dear,
says Mrs. H, envious.
And what's more, it's all coming your way.
The kettle's on the boil. But now she's in her stride.
What's this?
She goes on.
I see a pyramid.
Mixie's eyes open even wider as Mrs. H's voice sinks to an orphic whisper.
Long, long, long ago, we knew each other very well in those days, you and I,
she drones on. A shiver goes down Mixie's spine and up again. The temperature in the room drops sharply. Only the teapot, snug in its crocheted tea cosy, doesn't notice.
Go on,
Mixie urges, impressed. Screams the kettle in agony on the stove, but neither of them heed it. She could have guessed as much. How often hasn't she had that queer feeling of having lived before? After all, this can't be one's only life, can it?
What was my name in those days?
She murmurs. Mrs. H ransacks her memory.
Nefertiti!
Mixie's thrilled to death. What did she wear when she was Queen Nefertiti, she asks, breathlessly.
See-through undies.
Oh, she's always had a secret yen for see-through undies. But suddenly she feels lonely and frightened.
Was Muddle there too?
But of course, dear, he was your favourite sphinx.
Now the kettle's lid has jumped off and clattered down to the kitchen floor, and Mrs. H can't think of anything more.
But what happened?
They forgot to put any food in your tomb,
Mrs. H replies dryly.
Just hieroglyphics and such like. So you both starved to death.
Mixie can't imagine anything worse. Shaken, she asks in a trembling voice whether the boys were in ancient Egypt too. The seeress yawns.
Why, of course.
What were they? But Marion Honeysuckle's imagination is giving out.
Crocodiles.
Now it's long after closing time, and the boys are swaying up the street arm in arm, singing "The More We Are Together." Ever since lunchtime, they've been throwing darts wider and wider of the mark, and now they're the best of friends. Overhead, the owl, who's also taken a drop more than's good for him, is spiralling round and round, or plunging into giddy nosedives. "The more we are together," they sing.
"The more we are together, the merrier we shall be. Oh, never mind the weather, but don't be late for tea. With tiddlywinks, or so she thinks, and that's the game for me. You could knock her down with a feather,
as anyone can see."
Far and wide over our town's rooftops, the soldier's fine tenor voice makes itself heard above Macology's gritty bass, with Trixie's uncertain tones nourished on Wagner lurching about somewhere in between. As they get to the tiddlywinks bit, the soldier soars up to his highest note on "Me," where it hovers till his breath gives out, and then they all join in.
"The more we are together, the merrier we shall be.
The ladies, and Mr. Muddle, of course, have long ago gone off to bed, but Mixie's left the kitchen door unlocked. As usual, it's been raining. Suddenly, their song breaks off. The pavement gives way under their feet, and one after another they go whizzing down the area steps on their backsides and end up with an almighty crash in a heap against the kitchen door. This is followed by wild oaths and furious recriminations.
What are you doing?
Can you get your foot out my mouth?
And Mixie's woken up by the owl hysterically flapping his wings against her bedroom window. Hadn't she warned them the area steps are as slippery as can be?